Blog Talk Radio.
Well, praise the Lord, my brothers and sisters. Thank you for joining us tonight with another exciting episode of the PRF Table. Tonight we have around the table myself, Brother Warren Feastwood, and my good friend JR. JR, you want to say hello?
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome, welcome, welcome. How you doing today, brother?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm starting to see now what you're talking about when you say you got to bring it when you first get on it. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I see why you're getting on this about it all the time now. Well, I just want to do a recap over the last two shows before we get into tonight's show. If you've been paying attention to the last two shows, you know that we started talking about entitlements. And one of the things that was placed in my – well, one of the reasons why it was placed in my heart and my spirit is because I started looking at how we treat entitlements. And a lot of times how we treat entitlements can cause headache or cause problems. One of the things that it can do is we can come reliant on an entitlement. However, the problem comes in when that entitlement – we're no longer entitled for. So it just really hit me hard because I was going through something. I realized how I was handling this situation. And in that process, I was no longer entitled to something. And this was not money, as a matter of fact. It was due to my position. And I started realizing some of the things that I was saying to people. And I was like, well, I'm no longer entitled to this anymore. And then I started branching out to other things. So over the last two shows, we started talking about entitlements. And we just really dialogue entitlements the first 2 weeks ago. We really just dialogue entitlements and what we felt like entitlements were and how we treat entitlements and all this good stuff. And we really broke down what is an entitlement. We kind of realized that there's a definition of entitlement that Webster gives us or the dictionary gives us, but then everyone has their own idea of what an entitlement is. And that right there causes a lot of conflict, causes a lot of confusion, causes a lot of things. Then after we got to that, last week we started talking about entitlements and handouts. And if you paid attention to last week, you'll know that there was a whole lot of discussion going on about entitlements versus handouts. And as I re-listened to the show, one thing I realized, and as I summed the whole show up last week, it's not really that we're been out of shape about entitlements, the use of entitlements. We're real bit out of shape about the abuse of them. So, like I was telling JR earlier today, we don't have a problem with, you know, senior citizens getting their Social Security. We don't have a problem with veterans getting their just benefits. We have problems, and I don't mean it as 100% overall. We don't have a problem with, you know, the governor living in the governor's mansion and you know, expense accounts for the CEO. What we have a problem with is the abuse of it or the misuse of it. So I have a problem with, I'm just speaking for myself right now, I have a problem with certain people going to certain programs and they haven't done anything. Or when that program is over and it was designed to set you up for success, and then when it's over, you're either rolling through another program or you try to prolong this program. And so that's when I started realizing it's not so much as the use, but it's the abuse. So as we dialogued that the past 2 weeks and got to really talking about entitlements and everything, then over the week, me and JR have been dialoguing, and we all know that this is tax time. So tonight we want to talk about and bring up talking about tax returns, which falls right in line in entitlements. So with that, doing a recap, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to JR for tonight. Go ahead, JR.
Thank you, Brother Feaston. Before I get into just welcoming everybody, we just want to say welcome to Paula Brooks as well. Hey, Paula, how you doing out there?
I'm fine. Good evening, everybody.
Hello, Paula.
I'm glad we'll be talking about tax returns tonight because I have quite a bit of information regarding filing taxes.
Great. And that's one of the things that we wanted everybody to hear, you know, when we were talking about this, Brother Feast and I say, hold on, Sister Paula does taxes, so why have to go outside of the table, outside of the community when we got somebody that sits down with us at the table that already is involved in this. So we're grateful for you, Paula, for what you're going to bring tonight. And let's just go ahead and set this show up because, as Brother Feaster said, you know, this topic tonight of dealing with this subject actually came from entitlement. So tonight's show is entitled Maximize Your Tax Refund. And we hope that title is crafty enough. We hope that title grabs your attention, those of you who are listening, because really, Brother Feaster and I, when we were talking, some people believe that they are entitled to a tax refund. Now, yes, a tax refund is not an entitlement program, as we had talked about in the previous weeks. But here it is. If you pay taxes and you pay into that tax system because of you working, because of your income, you may pay over what the government requires you to pay for that year. So you are entitled to a tax refund if you paid over what the government requires of you to pay. The thing that is burning within us is it's not guaranteed. Just because one files their taxes doesn't guarantee them a refund. Not you, not I, not anybody. So we have to be careful if any of you have a entitlement mentality that once you file for your taxes, that you should be getting something back, like the government owes you something. It does. I mean, Paula, help me if I'm wrong. I don't think it works like that. I think it only works if you have paid more into it than what you actually owe from what the federal government is saying.
You're absolutely right, JR. You know, most people, and I have so many clients, they want, Paula, get me something, get me something. But they don't understand that they haven't paid anything. I won't name anybody, but I have one client, she made $50,000, and she only paid $300 in taxes, and she was expecting a refund. It's not possible. Now, as JR was stating, if you paid more than the allotted amount in taxes, you are due a refund. And then if you receive your standard deduction or you itemize and it lowers your taxable income, yes, you're due a refund. And most people, they have this thing now where I see the signs out, get $4,000 per child. That's ludicrous. I mean, it's a lure. It's a way to lure you into their offices. But the earned income credit is never $4,000 or $3,000 per child. It, for one, depends on your income that you've earned during the year, and it depends on the status under which you're filing. So, you know, people shouldn't be deceived by those gimmicks, I would say, believing that they're going to get $4,000 per child. It's not going to happen.
And one of the things that I think is...
In regard to the return being an entitlement, I do believe that we all, as citizens of America who pay taxes into the system, we are due a refund if it belongs to us, if we have paid the adequate amount of money to the IRS. Yes, they do owe us back. And the bad thing about it is a lot of people who file taxes, they aren't aware of what is actually due them. You know, a lot of people try to file their own returns, and they don't know the laws because the government actually set the system up to kind of assure people of a refund. But a lot of people don't know the tax benefits, so they lose out.
And so this is what I was thinking about, Paula, since you just jumped right in there to talking about earned income credit. Can you tell the listeners what is earned income credit and what is it supposed to be for?
Certainly. Earned income credit is for those individuals whose income is below the threshold amount. Earned income credit is not just for people who have children. You know, I see a lot of my clients, trying to gather up kids to put on their returns, and first of all, that's illegal. But a single person, a person who files under the single status, can get earned income for themselves. Now, the maximum amount for a single person with no children is about $464, which is not the thousands of dollars that most expect, but it is something. So while the government does allow for single people with no children to get earned income, I think that that's a fairly good amount when you're not really having a hustle for children, or you don't have to have a baby to get it. It's free money. Whether or not it's an entitlement, I would say that it is, because once again, earned income credit is for those people who have earned an income below the threshold amount. And it's kind of tricky because it's like they want you to be nearly impoverished to get it. But it's okay. It's an added incentive for those people who are looking for a refund.
So when I look at, I just posted on the Facebook page, possessions.resources.finances, a section from the IRS website that talks about earned income tax credit. It gives you different questions and different answers. And it just clearly says earned income tax credit is a benefit for working people who have low to moderate income. A tax credit means more money in your pocket. It reduces the amount of tax you owe, and they also give you a refund. And I think, listen to the last part of that sentence, may also give you a refund. So I think it's important to educate people to understanding that just because you file with earned income tax credit or for that, that you may not get a refund. It may not get you an actual refund. Am I off base in my interpretation of it, Paul, or are we dead on with it?
We're not off with saying that, because what people don't understand is everybody's not due an earned income regardless of how many children they carry. According to the textbook that I have, and in any IRS textbook, it tells you the earned income, there's an allotted amount of money that you can earn, such as the lady that I was speaking of who made $50,000 this year. She has two kids. However, she's not due that credit, that earned income credit, because she made more than the threshold amount. You know, and people don't understand, well, if I can't use my kids to get earned income credit, I'll let someone else use them. And that's not necessarily the way to do it, because first of all, as I said before, it is illegal. But what you don't realize is you can also use them as exemptions, which lowers your taxable income. So although you're not getting an earned income, it'll lower your taxable income. So the taxes that you paid may not have actually been due, and you'll get some of those taxes back.
And this is what I really want people to kind of understand, because this goes along lines with what Brother Feaster and I was talking about earlier this week, and actually even on today. If somebody is expecting to get a tax refund, whether it's because they have filed with earned income tax credit or whether they have not, I think it's worth even, and Brother Feaster, you can jump in on this, if there's an expectation or entitlement that just because I file taxes and I'm going to get a tax refund, what happens when what Paula just said, the laws change, and what you thought you were going to get because you received a refund last year, now all of a sudden something has changed within the IRS code that you're not aware of because you don't follow it until it's time for taxes in January. And then that expectation of I'm going to get a refund is there, and then you don't get it.
Most people
puts people in a bad situation.
It does, because when you're expecting and you're planning, making plans for that money, and it doesn't come, and the funny thing is, tax laws don't change every other year or every 3 or 4 years. Tax laws change every year. So we as tax preparers, we have to stay educated on the new tax laws every single year. Yeah, I just learned tonight that the health care that was required for everyone was going to be penalized to those people who didn't have health insurance. And just prior to the call, I was preparing for this segment tonight, and I learned that the Obamacare didn't prepare properly for this, so nobody's going to be penalized this year. That's a relief, everybody. It's a relief for me. But I was glad because I'm preparing returns, and I'm wondering, what do I put this in, you know, for my clients so that they won't be penalized? And my mentor just said to me, that's not going to happen until next year. And most likely, who knows if it'll even come into effect next year. According to what he was saying, it doesn't appear that it's going to be prepared for next year either.
So, Paula, with that being said, how do we go ahead and how do I find out or keep track of even find out the change in the tax law?
Well, there are local IRS offices in every city, and there's a plethora of tax law books in there. They're just little, what do you call them, the little leaflets, I guess. Yeah, and you pick up a host of them or whichever one applies to your particular situation, and you have to study it. I mean, it's like in the court system, ignorance doesn't win you anything. It doesn't get you anywhere, with the IRS. You have to know or you have to have a knowledgeable tax professional preparing your return.
So it would behoove me or either be in my best interest to, at the end of the year, go search out this information and at least do some type of research and have some type of idea?
I would do it during the year, at the beginning of the year, so that you'll know. You know, when you're filing your documents for taxes, you know, you want to know what you need to file and what doesn't need to be filed. A lot of people don't know that when you shop for your clothing, you're paying taxes on those clothes. You can write that off. You know, but who's going to go through the agony of saving each and every receipt during the year?
Me.
Purchases they've made.
Oh, that's right.
Wow. Well, that's a plus. That's a plus. I just don't have the patience for it. But, I mean, you can even estimate it. But if the IRS wants you to show proof, you got to show proof. So that's why people save their receipt, because we pay taxes on everything.
Hmm. I'm glad you said what you said about keeping receipts, because a lot of times what I've experienced, and I have a background in the criminal justice field, and I teach in the criminal justice field as well. And that statement that you were making is one I tell my students: ignorance of the law is no defense.
Right.
So we can't be engaged in a certain type of behavior and then say, I didn't know. It's all up to us to have the responsibility and also for others around to help us with accountability of making sure that if we're having somebody prepare our taxes, that we know a little bit about them, because there's a lot of places, I could say in my city, there's a whole bunch of tax places in my city, in my tri-city area, that may have popped up right before tax season comes. That's not to say that they're not a reputable place, that they don't operate with integrity, but it does say that if something just popped up right before the time when you're going to get your W-2, you may want to use some wisdom and seek God to say, where is it that I need to be filing my taxes? Who do I need to use to file my taxes? Because at the end of the day, Paul, if you file our taxes and something is not right and I get one of those letters from the IRS, guess who I'm coming back to?
Paula Brooks.
I'm going to come back to you, and let me give you a case in point. We had a hailstorm that came through last year, and it came through and it did a lot of damage to a lot of cars, and there was about five companies or five businesses that wound up being on the side of the road where you could take your car in, they can give you an estimate, they were able to show and do everything that they needed to do right up under a tent. It was two right next to each other around the corner from me, and then there was about three more within like a 2 or 3 mile radius. They came because there was a need for it. And tax places are the same way. A lot of them pop up right before tax time. And again, I'm not saying that they are not reputable. What I'm saying is we have to be diligent and do our own homework, or we should be able to have some people around us that know where they can say to go. I look at it like this, and Brother Feast and I, we were talking. I think it's a shame that if we have 300, as we have 300-plus members in my church, that there is not somebody within that congregation that, one, is a tax professional, or, two, can tell us where we can go to somebody that's very reputable where we don't have to deal with some of the mess, because there's a lot of people that have had taxes filed by individuals, helping them to get the – I'm going to hit it right now, Brother Feaster – helping them to get these income tax, these earned income credits, don't have children to first and claiming children.
Wow.
Doing a whole bunch of other type of things. And then what happens is when people get into those situations, it costs a whole lot more money to get out of it than it did to get in. So it's not worth those couple of $100s, as Paula was mentioning. It's not worth those couple of thousands of dollars, because I guarantee you, when you get caught up, it's going to cost you more in legal fees. It's not only going to cost you legal fees, but it's going to cost you pride. It's going to cause embarrassment. And we don't want people going through that. That's why we're talking about this. We want people to be able to do it the right way, so you don't have to worry about it. And again, if it's not done right, if there's something that pops up, if you're dealing with a professional, not somebody that's fly by night, like not somebody that just popped up and don't know what they're doing, or that's just here for a couple of months and next thing you know they're going to another city. I hate to say it, but, you know, you kind of reap what you sow in that instance.
Exactly. You know, in regard to earned income credit for children, I'd like to share my testimony. When I earned income credit is allotted to the custodial parent. So when I divorced my husband, my ex-husband, he hurriedly filed his taxes before I could, and he put our children on his return. Well, I had been taking care of them the entire year, and he got the earned income credit. So when I filed my return was kicked back. So although you may have children, for your parent, it's important not to file those children unless the custodial parent gives you the right to. Now, we wound up going to court, and the judge said, okay, Mr. Brooks, you'll file them next year. She filed them 1 year, you filed them. And the judge is not even allowed to dictate who files the children, and I found that to be marvelous on my behalf, because I always had my children and I had full custody. Even with the judge ordering that, it wasn't even allowed with the IRS. The IRS has the higher say, and they say that the custodial parent has the right to file those children unless that parent gives the other parent, the non-custodial parent, the authority to do it. So be careful.
And I like that idea. I like that idea because that's in my little tax knowledge, that's right. I mean, if you're not taking care of the children, why should you get credit for it?
Well, some people just want the money.
Yeah, and that's going to get me started. But
as Brother Peter was saying, those thousands of dollars look real good. And, I mean, it happens. So while it happens, you can also defeat that by, you know, providing the IRS with records of your children's school and their medical records. My ex-husband had to wind up paying that money back. They went on and gave me my money, but he had to pay it back. So he was a very bitter brother.
And, you know, that alludes to what we were talking about earlier and what you just recently said about, you know, it costs you more in the long run if you're, you know, trying to cheat the system or trying to circumvent the system and not trying to do it the right way, you know, which is what we've been talking about these past 3 weeks, talking about entitlements. If you're no longer entitled to it, then that's it. You've had your time in the sun. You've had your 15 minutes of fame. Now it's time to move on. you know, and which is, you know, one of the problems that are coming about. We're trying to get things that we're either no longer entitled to, that we're not entitled to, and it's causing headache and heartache. And the sad thing is, here's the sad thing, and Paul, I'm going to use your example. The sad thing is we think it's hurting me. No, look how many people were involved in your situation. It was you, your ex-husband, the judge, the IRS, and even your children.
Right.
So a lot of times we're thinking that because I'm trying to, you know, circumvent the system or get this or get that, it's only affecting me. No, it's affecting all, and it's affecting a lot more than me. And so that causes ripple effects. I mean, how much time did you have to take off of work just to go fight this? How much time did you have to go doing research, getting your lawyer, trying to find out what your rights are? You know,
right.
How much money did you have to put into all of this? Court fees, lawyer fees, you know, gas. So it's hurting. It's hurting more than it's helping. You get your $1,000 now, it might cost you $5,000 later.
Mm-hmm.
It will. And the thing about it is, what he didn't know was once you have to pay the IRS back that earned income credit, the following year you can have twins, you can have triplets. You won't get any earned income credit because they're watching you now. And so when I file returns for people, there's a question that asks, was your earned income credit kicked back or were you adjusted for 5 of the prior years? And if you have to say yes, you can't get earned income credit for a year.
Wow. Interesting. Well, we just want to say to everybody who's out there listening, if you're listening to us and you're listening online, you can call 914-338-1692. Press 1 on your dial pad. We'll see you light up on the switchboard, and we'll definitely bring you into the conversation. And right now we have one caller that's on the line calling from the last four of 5087. Welcome to the United States.
Good evening. This is Eva Jennings from North Carolina. And my question is, if you are paying child support for your child, regardless of whether, you know, it's because of a divorce or if it's just a child that you have to support, male or female, would you recommend, if that child is not living with you, adding them on as a dependent during the year and then allowing the person that's providing custodial care to file them on their return at the end of the year when they file their taxes?
It's not a question of allowing that custodial parent. They have the right to. You cannot, if you're paying child support, you cannot file a child on your return who you do not have custody of. Now, if the custodial parent gives you authority to file that child, you can. But otherwise, you cannot, because the custodial parent has the right to file the child.
Okay. And that's for either or, if they're carrying them through the year or if they file them on their return. Is that correct?
Yes. It doesn't matter. If you carry the child on your W-4 and you're not the custodial parent, you still can't carry them unless the custodial parent gives you that right. And if you have an understanding with the custodial parent, I'm sure they will, especially if you make more than them.
And I think it's also worth noting that you have to be careful. And a lot of this, what we're talking about, depends on relationship. Because if I'm the custodial parent, and correct me again, Paula, if I'm wrong, but if I'm the custodial parent and I tell you, Paula, you can go ahead and file little JR, and then I go and I file, and then you file as well, even though I've given you that permission, you're the one that's in the wrong. You're the one that's going to have to fight it out because I had the right from the beginning. So I would recommend, and I hate to recommend, but if there is going to be some type of communication with that, it would be best if somebody had something in writing. Because if not, it's going to always default back to that custodial parent.
Exactly. And I would suggest the same thing. Always get it in writing if they agree to let you file that child.
I did have a second question, and it's in regards to persons that are receiving Social Security benefits and may have worked a portion of the year. And on the Social Security statement that comes out, it gives you an opportunity to do some calculations to determine whether you even have to if you didn't earn a certain amount. So are those Social Security benefits, even though you don't reach that dollar amount in receipt of Social Security benefits, do you still have to turn that in on your return if you're filing from a private sector?
There's a, excuse me, as you stated, there's a certain amount that a person who gets Social Security can earn. Social Security is not taxable, so you do have an option to file it or not. To file it, the reason people would file it is if they're petitioning for the earned income credit, because there's a certain income that you can make to allow you to get more of an earned income credit or less. So if you fall within the certain parameters of the earned income credit guideline, you might want to add it to your income or you may not. But adding Social Security to your income tax return is really an option because it's not taxable income.
Thank you.
Never knew that. Thank you, Sister Gummins. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brother Feaster, I know we were talking a little bit earlier, and I think what our caller just said leaves a good segue. I think it's important. Remember a couple of shows ago or a couple of months ago, we talked about February, and we had a person that worked in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court that provided us some data and some statistics, and I didn't call out the particular area. But the comment was that in February is the most common month for bankruptcies that are filed every year. So in the month of February, more bankruptcies are filed in the month of February than in any time of the year, and January is high as well. So in tune with this conversation about a tax refund, I think it's important that we also educate individuals regarding bankruptcy, because this is what I found out. If a person is in a, you know, there's two types of bankruptcies that most people file. One is a Chapter 7, which is a liquidation of debts, and the other one is a Chapter 13, which is a repayment plan. So with the Chapter 7, that's saying the judge or the bankruptcy court system is going to say, you really don't have enough to make it, so we're going to allow you to liquidate your debts. You don't have a bunch of assets that are floating around anywhere. You're pretty much bone dry for the most part. That's my language, but go to IRS.gov. USCourts.gov, and you can find out more information about bankruptcy courts. But here's the thing. If somebody is in a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, right, there is something that they're being asked for by the what's called the trustee. So if a person is getting a tax return and they do not report that to the trustee, and the trustee is the person that is overseeing that account for that person who has filed for bankruptcy, then do you know that they can sue that debtor for that money? So, Mr. Johnny has filed for a Chapter 7. The trustee finds out, even after the court, after their case has been closed, that the person received a tax refund, a refund on their taxes. That trustee can reopen that case and go and sue the debtor for that amount of money. And I think that's important to know, because there's a lot of people that I've been told never hardly ever go to the trustee and say, hey, I received this extra couple of thousand dollars or whatever that amount is, and they keep it. But it's not worth it in the long run if they cancel that Chapter 7 out and go and sue that individual to get that money back. Because remember, the government has said, we're going to give you relief from paying your creditors, paying debts that you rightfully owe to X, Y, and Z. So if you think about it, those individuals are out, right, Brother Feaster? They've lost out because the government has said you have shown a sufficient enough case that you don't have the assets nor the income to be able to pay these debts. So I think it's important that people realize there is a question that's being asked. There's a question that's being asked within the bankruptcy court. So you have to pay attention to it and don't ignore it if you have filed a Chapter 7. And there's a time where they can go back. So it's not that if an individual files for Chapter 7, the case is closed, and then they get a refund, that they can't go back and that they don't monitor this for a couple of years after that. They do it for at least a year. So I think that's important for people to know. There's some people that you just don't want to play with. One is the IRS, and the other one that I've learned is the bankruptcy court. You don't want to play with them because it can really make things difficult. The other thing I'll say about the Chapter 7 is if a person is in a Chapter 7 and the case has not been closed yet and they get a tax return, they are required to notify the Chapter 7 trustee. But let me tell you what will happen. If the trustee finds out that Mr. Such-and-Such received a tax refund and didn't inform the trustee's office, they can cancel that Chapter 7 and force them to go into a Chapter 13. Or what is a Chapter 13? A Chapter 13 is a repayment plan. So think about it. If the government is going to give you relief from these debts and give you a fresh start, why play around with a tax refund and force the government's hand to say, we're going to push you into a repayment plan where now you have to pay those debts off, but you have to pay every single month? You know how much of a hit to that, to your credit that can be? You know how much a hit to your pocketbook, because now you don't have the fresh start. The fresh start is not going to come for at least 3 years, depending on how many debts that that person has and how long that bankruptcy actually goes on. Let me tell you what happens with the Chapter 13. Chapter 13, a person is in a bankruptcy with the Chapter 13, a repayment plan. That tax refund is income. So there's an obligation to the government, Chapter 7 or Chapter 13, to notify them and say, I received this extra income. What would they do when you do that? They are going to require that person, Brother Feaster, to give that money to them so that they can do what? Use it to pay off their creditors, which they owe, which they're getting some relief from. So it really is a thing about honesty and integrity, because if you don't show honesty and integrity with the tax refund, why would you expect God to continue to give you one? I know I'm talking different, y'all. I'm just throwing this out there because I know for a fact that there's a lot of people that think it's mine. Going back to what you started off with is earlier today, Brother Feaster, that this is an actual entitlement, that I'm entitled to it. But no, you're entitled to it because you filed your taxes, but you're not entitled to keep it because you're within a relief shelter such as a bankruptcy that requires you to make notification to them to be able to give it.
That whole segment you just did, that whole thing, and you know it was going to come up, but everything that we are talking about is stewardship. I mean, all of it is being a good steward over what's yours and even what's not yours. You know, and the burden, I said this before, and I ain't going to go too far into it, but the burden is when we try to get what's not ours. That's always going to be the burden. You know, nobody has a problem when you earn it. Nobody has a problem when you deserve it. But majority of people have a problem, and I'm going to bring it all home. I have a problem when you have not earned it. And if y'all remember a couple of years ago, there was a commercial where the parents was at the child's graduation. And as he came out of graduation and he linked up with his parents, the question was asked, what are you going to do now? Are you going to find a job? He said, nope. He took off his robe. He said, I'm going straight to retirement. And that's a problem. You know what I'm saying? How are you going to retire from something that you have not done anything to? You know, you haven't put anything in. So it goes to stewardship. All of this grows into stewardship. It rolls into how do we manage the things that God has given us? How do we manage the resources, the finances, the knowledge, the information that God has given us? And when you said some earlier, Paula, and I asked about how do I find out that information. You know what? As soon as you said that, I thought about in the library, there's this small pamphlet that says 1040. That's always there every year. It's always, and it's a couple other places I remember seeing them. And it's right in, it's a small little, probably not even a 20-page pamphlet that I can easily pick up and look at and read and get the information for myself. Why do I have to rely on you, Paul, to tell me what I'm entitled? And I'm glad that you're there with that information and that knowledge. But if that same information and that knowledge is available for me, why am I relying on you when I can? Because you might forget, or you might not. And a lot of times when I go up to do my taxes, and during the conversation, something is said, and they're like, oh, wait a minute, that's another deduction. So a lot of times if I know it myself, then I can better prepare myself and my tax preparer. So, I mean, like y'all know, if you've been on here a while, you know, me and stewardship go hand in hand. So it's just, all of this is still stewardship.
I think we could be talking about driving a car to work, and somehow Brother Feaster is going to somehow be able to make that connection to this subject of stewardship. We got another caller calling back from 508-7. Sister Eva, you back with us?
I am, and I'm sorry to have so much to inquire about tonight, but you're just on a really good topic. I'm working thank you. I'm working with a group that's called Women of Incarcerated Males, and even those males that are returning and getting themselves back into society. And one of the questions that keeps coming up, they have gained employment, they're working, there was restitution out there that they were aware of because they were have been incarcerated for a while, that has gained a huge amount of penalties and interest. Now, they're working, and there has not been that attack to take it from their checks. But if they file their income tax this year, is the state going to come back and try to take all of that restitution that's out there from them and during with their income tax return?
Is this as a result of, and I just want to ask this clarifying question, are we talking about money that they owed that they had a court judgment that was placed on them, or are we talking about money that was owed that they're owed to the state government for some reason?
Okay, because of the criminal act that took place, there was that was a person that was killed, and to I guess repay restitution to the family, that amount was given. However, those individuals were not allowed to do any work release to pay back while they were incarcerated. But now they're home and they are working. And my question is, yes, they have gone to the courthouse.
Okay.
And
gotcha.
Because they tried to get some credit, and this popped up, and it showed up as a lien against them. So that's why I'm asking now that they're at that point of the year where they can file income tax return. Will the state take all of their income tax to try to pay that lien out there? How will that be handled?
Good question. Paula, can you help out on that one?
I did hear the question, but I'm not sure, because sometimes the government will take it to pay it, and sometimes they won't. It depends on if they catch it, because most parents who owe child support, they wound up getting those returns instead of the return going to the custodial parent. So it depends on the government's watchful eye. They may very well get those funds taken, and the restitution may be paid to the injured party.
And somebody, and correct me if I'm wrong, Paula, from my experience, somebody has to initiate that. It's not an automatic thing. Somebody has to initiate that is something that has to happen in order to pay that restitution.
Right, exactly, because when a parent owes child support, of course the state lets the government know, lets the federal government know, and so those funds are funneled properly. So, yes, the injured party should, or if it's a judgment that's in the court system, the city or state who maintains those records may forward them directly to the IRS. But to secure myself, I would go on and let the government know myself that I'm due this money, and I would send proof that it's owed.
Thank you.
We are hitting on some topics tonight. You know what? Let me talk briefly about rapid refund. And Paula, again, correct me if I'm wrong. You know, I do my research, I do my homework, and then I just try to bring what knowledge I have. When somebody goes to file for rapid refund, or I guess the loan, which is really what it is, rapid refund is really a loan against your money. So you're having a tax preparer or a tax company that is actually getting your refund fast, and they're going to keep a small percentage or a small amount of that money in order to hurry up and give you the money. So really they're giving you their money and then waiting on your money to come. Is that really what's really happening with the rapid refund, Paula?
Well, what happens there is they loan you money with the security that your tax return is going to be deposited to them. So the money is automatically going to go to them. If there's a balance, you'll get it. But most times when they loan you money, they charge you a high interest rate. So you may wind up getting something back and you may not. Now, what I see that most companies are doing now, since H&R Block was, they were banned from doing a rapid refund the year that I began doing taxes. I was working for them, and they weren't offering rapid refunds. What they were doing was the refund anticipation loan, and they would only give you up to $1,000. And I see that FastTax and some companies are giving you up to $1,500, but they won't loan you the entire amount of your refund. So if you're desperate for money, you will be giving these people $1,500 of your refund plus the interest that they charge.
Wow. Okay. So this is what I found out. When a person files a rapid refund, there's a question on there that says something to the effect, are you in bankruptcy? And if somebody is in bankruptcy, then you can't file, and I've been told this through the bankruptcy court, that you are not able to file, or that whoever that tax preparer is should not be allowing you to file for a rapid refund because you are within bankruptcy.
Because your creditors are going to get your money, so they won't get paid back. So most likely they won't risk themselves giving you that money knowing that they won't be reimbursed.
And here's the thing. If you answer incorrectly on that, that person may get the refund. But the issue is it's dishonest. The issue is that person has now cheated the system and those individuals that have a right to whatever it is that is coming to you as far as inside of a tax return. So I think, again, reputation. Again, dealing with individuals that's going to do it the right way to make sure that you're not hemmed up. Because I promise you, every year we have a tax professional or a tax company getting walked out of their establishment in handcuffs every year.
Wow.
Every year. And guess what? There's people that I know that I've heard about bragging on, such and such is going to give me this extra money. Take your taxes over there. Such and such is going to help get you some extra money. All this crazy stuff. And I'm telling you, people, it is not worth it. It's not worth it for just your physical self, but it's not worth it for your spiritual self as well, because you're not getting over on anybody, and God sees it. So guess what? If you cheat the system to get a tax refund, don't act like God did it. He allowed it to happen, but don't act like he's blessing you, and that money is cursed money. So how in the world is it going to be able to be used to bless somebody else? I know plenty of people that have cheated the system when it deals with these tax refunds. And they may have got the immediate relief. They may have been able to pay off or stop that foreclosure or stop that eviction. But in the long run, something else continued to happen. So, again, this is burning in me, just like it is in Brother Feaster, as a thing of caution. When you look in the Bible, every time you see the word woe, W-O-E, that's a thing saying, hold on, you need to pay attention to what's being said afterwards. So I hope that people take this as not about telling you what to do. Everybody's grown and makes their own decisions. But there's repercussions for those decisions as well. And those decisions that are made with those repercussions behind them are not repercussions that are only going to affect you one as an individual. They're going to affect you one as an individual, members of your household, members of your community, members of your church. And why put people through that? And that brings us to something different. That means, why would people have to hurry up and get their tax refund?
That's what I want.
Why? Because they need the money right now. So you get a tax refund, you hurry up and get it, you pay interest on that money. The question is, what do you do with that money when you get it? The reason why so many people have to hurry up and get the money is because they don't have a savings account or enough savings already established. Go ahead, Brother Feaster. I'm done.
Yeah, I'll be stunning on facts. I've been waiting on this part of the show. I'm gonna flip both sides of this coin and play on both sides in that question. You know, why do we have to have the refund so fast? Why do we need it back? First, I'm gonna talk about in most cases. Well. Let me walk through my life. At first, it was because I wanted my money. That's the way I thought. This is my money. I want it back as fast as I can get it. Now, I'm going to tell you, when I had that mentality, when I had that mindset, I can't tell you anything that I did with that money. But I got it back quick. But I can't tell you nothing I did with that money. My whole mindset was, this is my money, I want it back, and I want it back now. That was my whole mindset. Another thing about it, why do I need it back so fast? There are some people out there that, I'm struggling, JR, you know where I'm trying not to go. There are some people out there where, I mean, matter of fact, on Facebook, it's been posts already going on. You know where I'm going. There's been posts already going on where it talks about, you know, in 4 months after the tax return, you're in the poorhouse. Right now, you're living large and living high. You know, you're rolling on some rims and a nice ride. But then after that tax money roll out, now you're living in the poorhouse. Now you know, trying to find a way to pay your rent and stuff like that. You know, so a lot of times it's the lottery. Once a year, we strike the lottery. This is extra money, so we're going to go and splurge. But then there are those, and this is where me and my wife and I have gotten, and I was talking to a young lady today. There are those that when it comes and they file the taxes and it is said you're going to get X amount of money, let's say $1,000, then there are people that go home and they plan on what they're going to do with that money. The young lady that I was talking to, she's having a life-changing situation going on. So she has to find a place to stay. You know, she's got to pay off some loans. Well, not she don't have to, but when she gets this place to stay, you know, she's looking at how much money she's got going out, and she has a substantial amount of money going out on some loans that she took out. So what she decided was with this refund that they told her she was going to get, she's going to pay off one of her loans, pay on two more of her loans. She's going to use some of that money to get into her new place. And then she's going to take the rest of the money that's remaining, put it in her savings account, and immediately begin to live on her new money. Because once she pays off one of these loans, she's going to have, you know, a couple hundred dollars coming back into her account. So instead of using the rest of that loan money, the refund money, she's going to begin to live off the money she paid into the loan. So, you know, wherever you fall at in that, that's where you're, you know, that's where it, that that's the answer to that question. Why do I need my money back so fast? Why do I need it right now? Initially, in my case, it was just so I can go party. That was it. I'm finna go party. I'm finna go have a ball. And, you know, that money went so fast, I couldn't even tell you not one time how much money I got. But after I started budgeting my money, I can pretty much tell you how much I've been getting over the past couple of years as my wife and I sit down and begin to budget the money. You know, I really think it goes, Gerald, you already hit me up, it goes back to that stewardship. What are we going to do with the money once we get it? You know, what are we going to do with it? My first couple of refunds, I was in the club. I didn't drink much, so I was buying other people's drinks. I was burning up gas, going up and down the road, going to clubs, and I didn't have nothing to show for it. I could have put that money to the side because I was single, didn't have too many. Matter of fact, didn't have a car note. All I had was insurance. I could have put that money in the bank and been sitting a whole lot better than I am now. So it starts with how we view the refund and what we're going to do with the refund. So that's my answer to that question, JR.
I think it's a good question. And I think we have one of our listeners that had posted something that said, maybe next time some tax strategies for the single person with no dependents. The government is killing me in taxes, so this time of the year is not exciting for me. I think that's real talk. I think we have to be willing, and I know we are on the PRF table, we have to be willing, not just on the PRF table, but just as people in society, people within ministry, to be able to address all aspects of people's lives. So I think on our next show, we will try to, and Paula, if you can help us out with that, because we want everybody to be able to get the maximum that they can actually get. We want everybody to be able to feel like, you know, there's some hope for me. You know, we don't want people having to feel like if I was married, then I would be better taken care of as far as a refund because I have all this other stuff. But I'm sure there's some strategies out there, Paula, that you may be able to bring to the table for our next show for the single persons with no dependents. Since it was asked, and you know that's just how we operate on the PRF table. If the question is asked, we'll do our very best to be able to definitely try to actually address it. So I'm sorry, Paula, were you about to say something?
I was going to say before we end the show, I'm anxious for next week's show because I did want to state that while people think they have to cheat the system to get a decent refund, they really don't. The IRS has created several ways for you to get legitimate refunds that are legal, and people just don't know what is available to them and for them.
Okay. And here's one of the things that I think is very, very critical. This is how Brother Dunlap looks at the tax refund. I look at it as a blessing from God. I'm not cheating the system. If I can claim it, I claim it. If I can't, I don't. And it's a blessing, and this is how I perceive it, a blessing from God that I'm able to get that refund because, for me, that is money that I did not expect, right? Money that I did not expect. For me to be able to get a refund, it being a blessing from God, my take on it is, if it's a blessing from God, I need to be able to share that blessing. So if I get a refund, it's not all about me just paying off all of my bills. What about being able to help somebody else that may not get a refund or is going through something? So I want to deal with next week, in addition to what one of our listeners has asked us to do about, you know, strategies for single persons, I would love for us to be able to talk also about these different things that you just mentioned, Paula, where people don't have to cheat the system. Here's a thing of reality. There's a reason why people cheat the system. Can we just be real with it? There's a reason why somebody said, you know what, I'm going to go claim little JR. so I can get this money. There's a reason why people who are millionaires, I mean, come on, we're not just talking about people who are living below the poverty line. There's a reason why people who are millionaires cheat the system. We have to be willing to talk about what's going on, what's beneath all of that, and just be able to address some of these things. And maybe by us addressing them, Paula, by us addressing them, Brother Feaster, maybe that'll be something that somebody can hear and say, you know what, I just need to do it the right way. And by doing it the right way, it always works out better when we do things the right way. May not get $4,000, may only get $200, but you can sleep better, hopefully, with $200 than looking over your shoulders with $4,000.
And that's what I was going to say, JR. I mean, two of the questions I want to ask is, one, how much does a peace of mind cost?
Mm.
And the other question is, exactly how much are you worth? You know, how much does a peace of mind cost? We got people spending thousands of dollars on their alarm system just for a peace of mind. And I don't even have an alarm system, and I stay close to a bad street in the city, and I sleep good at night. You know, how much is a piece of mind? How much are you really worth? Are you really worth that extra $1,000? Is that's what you're saying you're worth? And if you ask me, I'm worth a whole heap more than $1,000. So a lot of times Let me stop saying a lot of times. But, the things that popped in my head while we were talking tonight, like I said, number one, how much am I worth? And number two, how much is a peace of mind? Because I tell you what, for personal experience, I know for a fact, those first couple of times when I was trying to cheat the system and get all this and all that extra, it wasn't a peace of mind. It was not a peace of mind. But I'll tell you what, I have no worries when that refund check come down. None.
Well, Paula, what would you say, I mean, if there's anything that you want to say before we end for tonight, what are a couple of things that you can just put out there to help folks that are inside of this tax season? You know, the ones that are going to come to you, the ones who are not going to come to you, the ones who are listening to the show, the ones who are even thinking about doing something that's not the right thing, or going to one of those ones that's going to get walked out in handcuffs sometime during this tax season. So the floor is yours. We'd love just to hear what you, as a tax professional, a tax preparer, can educate us on.
I would suggest to all tax filers that they seek out a qualified tax professional to explain the tax laws to them, who will go over their return precisely with them, who can help them better understand the tax laws, as opposed to just sufficing them and appeasing their desire for more money.
Good.
Because if we trust God and we know that God is everything we need, we don't need to cheat anybody because God provides. But at the same time, money is a delicacy. It's nice to have money and not have to want for anything. But defrauding the IRS is not the way.
I promise
you all, the IRS has created a host of ways for you to get extra income during income tax season. You just have to find a reputable tax preparer, a knowledgeable tax preparer, who can help you get what you deserve or what's due you, and nothing more, because the IRS, they will find out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't, God knows. So it's
right.
Really not worth it. Because you may gain it, and they may never catch up with you. But karma will. God will allow that you will lose that same money somewhere along the line, and you won't even realize that it's that money that you're losing.
Mm.
It's really not worth it.
Thank you so much. We thank you, Paula, for just taking the time out to just talk to us and talk to the listeners and educate us on what are some things that we can do to maximize our refunds. Brother Feaster, what's your final comments for the night, good man?
I just want to thank Paula for a lot of the information that she provided tonight. Because I learned a good bit tonight. I mean, I'm the average American citizen that around this time of year I go to my tax preparer and I expect my tax preparer to know everything that he or she needs to know to file my tax. And one of the things that you told me tonight, Paula, was that I can go find out what the tax laws are myself.
Right.
I mean, that's my responsibility. That's my job. I don't have to rely on you. So, you know, tonight was very, very enlightening, and I'm probably going to go try to find that book and look at it for myself before I go home and file my taxes. So, I mean, it was a lot of useful information tonight, and I thank you, Paula, for the information. I hope that, you know, the people that are listening would take heed to it because, you know, it is what it is. This is the time of year that gets to us every year, and some of us look forward to it and some of us don't. But it affects all of us in one way or another. So getting the information is very beneficial. So I'm glad we had this show, and I'm glad we're going to continue on with the single person next week. So those are my comments. Thank you.
I'd like to add, if anyone out there who's preparing your own taxes or just needs to know information, I'm willing to help anybody with the expertise that I have. I'll put my number and name on the PRF Tables Facebook page, and if you have a question, you can inbox me or you can give me a call, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can.
Amen.
And
we appreciate
that. Pass the mic to you guys.
All right, Paula. And for those of you who don't know what the Facebook page is, it's possessions.resources.finances on Facebook. And, again, that's where you'll be able to get Paula's contact information. And if you have any questions or comments for us, myself, Brother Feaster, Sister Dia, in her absence, let us know. We want people to be educated. We want people to be able to have the information and have the knowledge that they need, that you need, to be able to go forward and live the best possible life that you have. Let me end on two notes. One is, Brother Feaster, you were talking about covetousness, recall correctly. And there's a biblical dictionary, so to speak, and this is what it says regarding that word. A strong desire to have that which belongs to another is considered to be a very grievous offense in Scripture. The 10th commandment forbids coveting anything that belongs to a neighbor, including his house, his wife, his servants, his ox, his donkey, or anything that belongs to him, Exodus 20:17. Jesus listed covetousness or greed among the many sins from within, including adultery, theft, murder, those things which make a person unclean. That's in Mark 7:22. Paul, your favorite person, Brother Feaster, reminded the Ephesians that greed or covetousness is equated with immorality and impurity, so that these things must be put away. A covetous or greedy person is an idolater, and covetousness is idolatry, Colossians 3:5. And James warns that people kill and covet because they cannot have what they want. So I think that in itself is a very good segue into next week's show, because I really want to also deal with things that people need to stay away from. I think it's important after we deal with the single aspect of it, as Paul is going to help us with that, but really getting down deep into the woods with what are some things that people need to stay away from. Do you need to stay away from a place that you can get your tax return done and buy a car at the same time? Do you need to stay away from somebody who wants you to prepare their taxes for them just so you can buy something from their establishment? When I want steak, I go to a steakhouse. When I want chicken, I go to a chicken place. I go to KFC. I don't necessarily want to get egg foo young at KFC. If that popped up on the menu, I would think that they won't prepare the egg foo young as best as they prepare the chicken, because that's not what they do all the time. So I'm not raining on anybody's business. Trust me, I'm not. But I want us to be able to say next week as we talk, and for you to bring those things to the table about what are some places that you may want to just reconsider, because you're talking about giving your personal information. You're talking about giving up some serious data. And if I can go here just briefly, identity theft takes a whole lot longer to get out of than it does to get in. So we have to be, as Brother Feaster would say, very good stewards, not just over the refund, but also good stewards over the information that makes us vulnerable, every last one of us, that makes every last one of us vulnerable to people that are out there praying over individuals during this time. Everybody, you have to know that there are people that are praying on places that don't have the type of security that they need to have with your information and with mine. Look at what happened to Target. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, go Google Target, and you'll find out that a whole bunch of people's personal information was stolen through a vendor, mind you. Not from a Target employee, but through a vendor, somebody that they did business with. I'm just saying. So, again, next week. Go ahead, Paula.
I want to piggyback off of what you just said. I thank God for the integrity that I have. I've been doing returns for 3 years now. I have clients that I've never even met. They've never seen me, and I've never compromised their personal information. And they trust me.
Mm.
Well, I thank you for bringing that up. It makes me feel good to know that people are actually out there messing with people's personal information, and I've never even had the thought to do anything like that.
Mhm. And that says a lot. It says a lot about you. It says a lot about your business, and it also says a lot about our God to even be able to allow you to be in that position to do the right thing. Some folk God ain't gonna allow to do taxes. That's just the bottom line. God is not gonna allow some people to do taxes because He's not gonna allow some people to have certain pertinent information. That's it, and it may be totally valid. So, Brother Feaster said, are we ever going to end the night? I don't know. Maybe. I know we have much time as we need on the PRF table, but we are going to end tonight's show. We hope that you've been blessed. And let me just say also the last thing, or one of the things that I definitely want to hit on next week, is what are ways that you can bless others as you receive this blessing of a tax return? What are some ways that you can bless others as you receive a blessing of a tax return? All the things that we've been talking about, I really believe that what has to happen is we just have to give it a try. Some of the things that we're talking about may seem very, very simple, and it may be a little bit more difficult for you who are listening, but reach out to us. Let's see how we can work this thing together. So until next week, we love you. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, and God bless.